Hey everybody, welcome, welcome. We obviously are meeting on a different day today than we usually do. So I just wait a moment to see who's going to be able to be here this week. I know for a lot of people in the States, it's also a holiday week, but hopefully a bunch of us can join live. All right. So I'm excited for our time together today. It looks like we might have a smaller group, which is always very exciting. It means we can be even more intimate. Before we jump in, just so you know, twice a year, we dog sit. The most adorable dog in the world. It's my sister-in-law's dog. And he's generally very quiet, but every now and again, he sees something going on outside and might bark very loudly. And I don't have any doors on my office. So if you hear a bark in the background, I apologize in advance. Okay. So we are jumping in today to the second call in our visioning and strategizing module. We're going to be looking at what I call the energetics of new things. But before we jump into that, we do have a couple of minutes. I'd love to hear from a couple of you, what's been resonating for you since our session last week on visioning? What has been moving through you? What have you been thinking about? What have you been noticing either for yourself around visioning or when it comes to your clients? We looked at a lot of different strategies and principles for visioning and what it's really about, what we want to be thinking about. So how's it been going? Maybe you've done a partner practice session with visioning. How has that gone? What have you learned? What have you noticed? I'd love to hear a couple of thoughts or what's coming through or questions on it. Or maybe you just haven't thought about it at all since last week. Who wants to share? Victoria.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, so I thought I'd just dive in. I have a disclaimer too. Our kiddo's home from her summer program. Listening, I listened to the last class a couple of times. And what was coming up for me really is like honing in and working on the resistance that can come up to allowing oneself to vision. I find that a lot, and I think I come across it most commonly as like these subtle, like, let's change the subject kind of thing instead of like following the through line and getting clear.
Yes.
So that was coming up for me, as well as really, again, like being aware of the filters, like my own filters, how important that is, to not be looking at a client's vision through my eyes, like, yes, through my filters. So those were like the two things that were really, I mean, there was obviously others, but I'll stop there.
Yeah. No, I'm so glad you're bringing these two pieces up. They're so important. So I'll work backwards. First, such a great reminder about filters, right? What we think a client's vision should be, or what the ideal business looks like, or the ideal relationship or business meeting, or right, whatever it is. Now, that might all be great wisdom for the client, but it can't be unless we're checking our filters first and understanding that it's our filter, it's our beliefs, it's our view. And so it's important with everything, visioning included. And then this resistance piece, I'm so glad you're bringing it back around, because I actually had a couple of pointers that I wanted to go into, just some more details around resistance with visioning. So it's a great segue to do that. So if everybody remembers, Victoria is, talking about, we looked a lot in our visioning class last week, how, yeah, visioning might sound exciting and like everybody wants to do it and let me vision what I want for myself. But because of messaging, cultural messaging, family messaging, fear, whatever it is, we can't assume that our clients are just going to be absolutely excited to really, for real, in authentic ways, vision what is aligned for them. And there is resistance that's going to come up, right? And so, of course, when we look at topics like befriend your fear, and we'll look at resistance archetypes, we'll look at strategies there. But I did just want to share a couple of pieces for right now that can be really helpful if a client is resistant to visioning. Number one, we all already know this, but as a reminder, normalize it, right? Because what can often happen is the client will go into, oh my gosh, I can't see anything. I don't know what I want. And then if the practitioner freaks out and feels like, oh my gosh, something has gone wrong, this isn't normal, like all the things, then the client, then heaped on top of that for the client is, we're not doing this right, or whatever it is, right? And it can snowball from there. However, if you as the practitioner remember, it's just part of the process to have some resistance to visioning, and that it is normal for many people in many situations. And this is a point of creating awareness for the client, right? And then you just create awareness on that for the client, right? It's okay that I just asked that question around, what would you want if you could have it anyway? You don't know the answer. Let me tell you, I have been there before. I have other clients that have been there before. That doesn't mean that we're not going to end up, co-creating this incredible vision for you, right? It's normal to not know at first. So we want to normalize. And then we might want to explore a little bit, right? What do you sense is in your way of being able, what you really want to see for yourself in this relationship, right? Whatever you're visioning. What do you sense that you're scared of that might be holding you back from being able to see what you really want here? If there was something that you might be avoiding, what is it that you might be avoiding? What might be at risk for you if you were to really name and articulate this vision for yourself? Right? So even without having yet learned befriend your fear technique or anything else, we can still ask breakthrough questions and explore with our clients. And that can often start to loosen it up enough for them to be willing to see a little bit more. The third thing to think about when a client is resistant to visioning, and again, this is all if it's in the right timing for them, right? We spoke a lot last week about it might not be the right season. This is all if we sense it's the right season. The other thing to think about is shifting from the mental level of learning and processing to another level of learning and processing. sometimes it's like, especially if there's resistance, the client can, it can almost like get hardened in if we're trying to look at it cognitively only, or like overthinking it in a way. And remember, we looked at last week, a vision is a product of the heart and the soul, right? So instead of asking cognitive questions, if a client is resistant, shift. So as an example, you could do a visualization, and I provided a supplemental little demo of doing a visualization. As another idea to shift out of the cognitive or the mental, do a vision board, right? You might do it together. You might assign it as a homework, but what vision boards are, you know, and usually I'll give the instruction for the client, don't overthink it. Look through magazines and any image that you associate with whatever we're talking about, their business, the relationship, right? Whatever, just any image or word that tugs at you, that kind of, you just, for whatever reason, you're like, ooh, that's interesting. Cut that out. Put it on the vision board. You don't have to overthink it too much. And then together in the next session, me and my client will look at it and we'll analyze, and I'll ask questions to go deeper, and it can help them articulate. Another way of shifting out of the mental level of learning and processing, connect with spirit, right? What does spirit want you to know about this conversation that you want to have with your sister? What does spirit want you to know about this next program, or whatever spirit is for them, higher power, inner wisdom, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes the resistance to visioning can show up as a client having too many ideas. They want to go in this pathway, and then, you know, and the visions don't like meet up, or can't meet up for a decade, right? Because there's so much going on. And sometimes this type of resistance, I call this, even though it looks like they're over visioning, it's also a resistance to visioning, right? To kind of like honing in on one thing. And this can happen because of fear of not getting to all the things, right? Or just a fear of honing in on the thing, you know, whatever it is. So I just want to point that out for you practitioner wise too, that's normal. That can certainly happen. We want to normalize that. We sometimes maybe want to do a little consulting or co-creating awareness on, you know, one at a time, and then ask questions around priorities. Ask questions like we looked at last week around ego or shoulds versus desire, or ego versus desire, to start to hone in on the what's the net, even if all of these visions are amazing, which is the next one to really hone in on. All right, let me pause there. Any thoughts or other questions on some of the pieces we just looked at? Golda.
Hi. Yeah, I showed up to a practice session with the lovely Victoria, and I was coming with a lot of grief, and a lot that I needed to unpack. So this idea of a visioning was like not available. But it was interesting the way she just holds such exquisite space that, like, through the unpacking, like, there was just subtleties of visioning that was able to occur. So I want to name, like, even though it was like, what's the big vision? It felt like the subtleness that was in the questioning, in the way we went, was still present.
Yes. Yes. And it's a process, right? It would be so amazing if we can say in one session, we're going to like tie it up in a beautiful, neat package, and by the end of it, you know what it is. Yeah, that can happen, but it is always a process, and sometimes more subtle and sometimes less subtle. And we want to have that patience and the time for it to marinate and to pull the layers, for sure. So I'm so glad that you were both able to experience that and see the incredible value in that.
Me too. Thanks.
Good. Bruce.
Yeah, hi. Got some air conditioning. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So a lot comes up around this, and when Victoria was talking as well, is that was the first thing on my mind is resistance. I definitely have a client that, you know, was not seen or heard or loved growing up. And so this resistance to even going to the positive side of things, because, you know, she feels guilty, you know, about having her own vision, or she wasn't heard. So, you know, that subtlety, bringing that in is what I'm, you know, working with, and also work with a lot of shadow parts, right? In the recovery space, in the space that we work with, you know, it's really difficult for people to get to that, what I call a glimmer, just a tiny sliver of a vision of what their life could look like. And to me, I think that's what really helps to shift the brain and neural pathways. And this is North Star, right? To get them to just hold that glimmer. I also call it a field of possibilities. What's possible up there, right? One of the reasons they're doing working with obviously this course and the coaching is like the right questions to get them there, to subtly, because creating this big vision is almost, it feels like in some ways to me like this spiritual bypass or toxic positivity that's not going to work, especially for the type of clients we work with and I work with. Some of them, yes, they're there, like you said, they're in that season where we can really get there. But when we're working with mostly people that are a lot of shadow work, and that's the tapping work we do also is ground shadow work too. It's like, I'm looking for like, just the subtle, like adding those subtle visionings, those glimmers that they can just hold on to just a piece of that.
Yeah.
And I think in your, I listened to the recording, one of the things you said is just having a vision for the vision, right? Which I thought was great. You know, it's like, yeah, there you go. It's like just the subtlest, but it's still like, how do I tweak this enough so that it's just something that they're holding on to as we're doing this shot? That
makes absolutely sense? Yeah, absolutely. It is like we were just saying, like it can often be a process. And I love how you are, like the way that you're putting it is like, sometimes it's these glimmers and you want to hold on to the glimmer, right? It's like a glimmer is still something to acknowledge and celebrate and come back to. And then the more over time you work on the issues of feeling like they deserve to have a vision, like it's safe to have a vision, you know, like all of that, as you're continuing to come back to the glimmers, they will deepen as well. And more will be added. Right. And then the other piece that I think is important in all that you're saying, and we looked at this last week too, is that it's a little bit of a myth that we can always create such elaborate visions or long-term visions of our life, or, you know, all this, like sometimes it is these pieces, and that is enough to keep on for us to move towards something. So long as those glimmers are aligned.
Yeah. They need to feel safe, yeah, right, to go there, because in the past when they've gone there, they've got knocked down, or they've been beat up, or, you know, or just like, absolutely, discounted. So I needed some validation there. It feels like the right direction. And I work with one, I called it a sliver. So let's just hold on to that sliver. What does it look like? What does it feel like? I want you to connect to it. But just what was coming up is just piling on is visioning, which you said,
and sometimes we don't even want to use that word, right? If that's going to be a little bit of a trigger word for people, we can know what it is, but we're not even going to use that language for folks sometimes. Right. Also, and then the other, I'll just toss to you, Bruce, if it's helpful for some of your clients. With the glimmer, I love what you're sharing. You know, what does it look like? What does it feel like? You could also, if a client is open to it, really see that glimmer as an entity unto itself with wisdom and dialogue with the wisdom of that glimmer. Yeah, what else does that glimmer want you to know? Even not about the vision, what does that glimmer want you to know about you? Right? And what you're capable of and who you are and what your resources are. And then it kind of becomes, you know, then because that's really activating the spirit level of learning and processing, right? This higher wisdom. And then it feeds the client to then be willing to maybe even vision another little sliver onto that glimmer as well, so that it becomes a relationship with it.
Expand it 10%. Just imagine it expanding.
Exactly.
Yeah. Great. Exactly. Thank you.
Maria's asking, what are examples of other language for vision? Great question, Maria. So sometimes it can just be as simple as just not using the word vision. Like, what would you want for yourself there? All right. Something as, so I'm not even talking about there's a specific other word, but to kind of not, sometimes vision can have so much weight to it. So, you know, if you would love to have anything here, what might that be? Right? Stuff, things like that. Okay. All of this is actually great prep and segue for what I want for us to look at today. The energetics of new things. So already, you know, we're talking about what can get in the way. What are some of the resistance points? And I wanna go deeper. Today's content is almost like, and we do this a lot in Sacred Depths. It's a little bit of a philosophy. Not a philosophy lesson, but like a human behavior / philosophy to get even more into kind of the thinking and feelings about new things, right? Visions are new things, because it will help us as practitioners, as we look at these different topics, understand more what could be coming up for our clients, either around being able to have the vision in the first place, or being able and willing to start strategizing on it. Strategizing, when we get to it in our next session, in essence, the way I think of what strategizing is making visions come to life, making visions, you know, in the 3D actually happen, right? But even before we can strategize on things, there can be resistance. Okay, so when I say new things, let me just define what I mean by that for our understanding. Really anything we might vision or revision. So it could be a new relationship, a new marketing strategy, a new home, a new way of being in the world, a new commitment, a new creative project, or it can also be an old project that is ready for either a new vision or to get restarted again, because it's kind of gone through a winter phase. We haven't worked on it either intentionally or unintentionally, and it needs a feeling of something new to get started again. The reason why I kind of want us to look at it in this way is because new things, whatever the thing is, in order to start something new or get something started again that has kind of gone into a rest mode, new things have a distinct energy. They have a different energy. To get something started or restarted, it needs a little bit of a different kind of energy than to maintain something that is already working and in action. So we don't want to treat a new thing or restarting, bringing something into its new cycle, even if it's old before, we don't want to treat it the same way that we'd treat something ongoing or continuing. And it's almost like when a baby is born, it needs a shot of, I'm going to get this wrong, Maria can help me this. It's, I think, Pitocin or adrenaline. It needs a shot of like something to be born, right? It's either adrenaline or Pitocin, but it kind of like, it needs an excitement in order to be labored and born. Oxytocin, that's what I was like. I knew I was forgetting it. Pitocin is the drug, exactly. So for new things, we want some new energy, some new excitement, right? This is kind of like where we want our clients to be for the visioning and the strategizing and the starting to take action. That new energy, that new excitement is kind of like the energy of spring in a way, right? When we think about the energy of spring, it's different than the energy of summer. It's like there's hormones in the air. There's like, ooh, it's not winter anymore. Let me see what's happening. I feel excited. I feel curious. I feel an energy of starting something new. That's where we would like for our clients to be with new things. However, as we know, even if someone is ready for spring and is ready to vision and is ready to strategize, they may not fully feel that at first. And some of that is because of our relationship to starting new things. We might be ready to start something new, but there might be some misalignment, right, in kind of our relationship to it. So first, let me just ask you this. Generally, what is your relationship to new projects or to starting old things up again, or new relationships? How do you approach new things? How do you feel about new things? Let's take a moment to notice for yourself. Marla finds it challenging to start new things. Yeah, you're not alone in that. Golda's saying excitement and overwhelm. Yep, you know that one well. Kristen says, can also be a lack of confidence in one's capacity to get something new up and going due to past history, neurodivergent struggles, et cetera. Yep, we're going to be looking at that as one of our pieces today for sure. I'm so glad you're bringing that up. Bruce is saying, I love new things. It is the follow through that I have a tough time with. Yeah, that's a maybe more of a summer issue. Where you get there too, not today so much. Kavita loves new things. A lot of people love new things. Agnes is saying excited, curious, energized, and overwhelming. Yeah. For Jessica, starting new things, it's the finishing them. That's the issue. Shiny object syndrome. Gonna get to that. Yep, fear of failing. Hopeful and optimistic, but so many possibilities, Maria is saying. Yep. Sheila says, I feel like they're magical and very special, but don't always live up to my own hype. Yeah. Okay, good. These are great. Yeah, it depends on the new thing. Okay. Okay, so let's take all of this and kind of look at a couple of different, I don't know what to call them, issues, things to think about that can help clients feel more of that springtime excitement energy around the new thing that they're working on. So the first thing, approach, or thing to think about is that it's okay to not know it all yet. It's okay to not know it all yet. Oftentimes, what can hold someone back from having that excitement about something new, visioning it, strategizing it, executing it, is they feel like they have to see and know everything first in order for it to be a legit path to follow, a safe enough thing to do. And so I wanna remind us all, and it's important sometimes to co-create awareness on this with clients, that visioning, initiation, and planting anything new starts in the dark, not in the light. When you start or restart a new project or a relationship or anything, you're not supposed to know all the details. Culture might tell us that we're supposed to, but we're not. Like when I decided to get pregnant for the first time, I thank goodness I didn't know all the details. I never would have done it, you know, but we're not supposed to. We're not supposed to know all the details. Early spring, you know, when so much visioning happens, is still wintry, right? It's not the longest day of the year where there's full clarity and sunlight. Dawn, the beginning of a day, is still darkish gray. We can't see all of the details yet. When we plant seeds into the ground, we plant it into the dark soil. We literally plant seeds into the mystery where we can't see them. Babies are partially blind when they're first born, and they certainly don't have all of their faculties and resources yet. In other words, we almost always begin in the mystery. The mystery is exciting, but it can also be a little scary, right? When we can't completely see, when we don't know all of the details and exactly how, when we don't trust that more clarity will come, when we don't see how it's going to work. And then all of this can lead to resistance around starting new things or visioning new things. But think of anything that you've started, anything in life, it was partially in the dark or in the mystery. It just was. So let's take a moment, and I'm not going to give this as much time as I would like to, but I give you about a minute and a half or 2 minutes. I want to invite you to just do free form writing. I'm going to give you a prompt and it's like complete the sentence and paragraph, just see where it wants to go. And the prompt is, starting in the dark feels like. Starting in the dark feels like, and just kind of write as fast as you can. Don't think about what wants to come through. Just let it come through. Starting in the dark feels like. Take another half minute, see what else wants to come through. And start to bring the writing to a close, and you can read it over. So, as transformational practitioners, we want to understand that our clients are going to feel lots of different ways about starting in the dark, right? And we want to be able to normalize that. And back to another part of creating awareness, we want to honor what is, right? We don't want to just pretend that's not there, but we might want to take some time with the client for them to, you know, express. I'm going to say a couple more things about starting in the dark and then give some coaching tips on this. Sorry, I just lost my place. We actually need the mystery in order to vision. We need the mystery in order to vision. Why does dreaming happen at night in the dark? Because there's no boundaries. Anything is possible at that point, right? And we need some of that, the not knowing, the not delineating right away, the not having the boundaries or the borders in order to kind of get deeper into seeing what we want. Oftentimes, if a client is scared of that the dark, it'll show up as an obsessive need to focus on the how of the project too soon, right? They're not willing to just let the vision settle in for them to take it in energetically. They want to know how, what are the steps? How am I going to get this done, And we want to, you know, always be using our listening skills to catch when that happens. And oftentimes what I say to clients is, I promise you, we're going to get to the how. But before we get there, I want to support you to commit to the what. We're going to get to the how. What are the steps? How are you, the strategy? How are we going to do this? But before that, I want you to embody and take in a little bit more of what you're committing to, and to feel it, right? To embody that what, commit to that what. Because again, like, we can't, if we're going to need to know everything, it's hard to move forward on that. Okay. So in terms of just a few more things in terms of working with clients. So we want to create awareness. If we sense that this piece is coming up, that they're having trouble visioning or initiating or, you know, any of it, because they're scared that they don't know all the things or they can't see all the things. We want to create awareness that this is happening for them. We want to normalize it. We want to honor whatever the fears that are coming up. We might want to share some of the wisdom that I just shared around starting in the dark and how everything starts in the mystery, if that's something that is going to land for our clients. We might want to also help them, get clear on what they are clear on, right? Okay. So you don't know all the things, but what do you know right now? We might want to ask a question like, when was a time in the past when you moved forward, even when you didn't know how, or you didn't know all the things? We might want to ask a question of, what is the gift right now in not knowing all of it yet? Jessica's saying, when clients push us directly to the how, we run the risk of being more consultants than coaches. That is very true. Yes. All right, let me pause on this. Anything that wants to be shared or asked, or what you're feeling excited about this kind of first approach that we're talking about here, issue, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, the, you know, helping clients not need to know it all yet. Jennifer.
Hey, so I've done so many visioning things along the way of, you know, coaching career, and it's such a thing, right? And I just love this prompt. I feel like I had a whole breakthrough when you said starting in the dark feels like. And I love the dark. Like, I love the dark. And yet, in that journaling, you know, it's parts work. It's like, for me, it's like, oh yeah, there's a part of me that freaking loves it. There is another part of me that hates not knowing it all. And I got to the heart of why, and, you know, that I've been doing a lot of EMDR and deeper excavating for the last like 5 months now. And, you know, as I'm sure all of us in this room, we're like obsessed with personal development. So, but it really hit. I was like, oh, I'm really scared of explosive behavior, of getting yelled at. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, well, that's, you know, and getting to now just be aware of that and get to nurture that piece and just get to work with, play with that little piece. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of going back into the ceramic studio not that long ago. And I wrote about it too. And I was just like, I walked in like super timid, and I just walked right up to the proctor and just said like, it's been a while, I'm scared. And they were like, okay. And they talked to me a little bit. And then in 5 minutes later, he was like, cool, so go get dirty. And just saying that, like, my inner child was like, yay, you know? So just, again, like, recognizing it's its parts. Like there's just all these different parts that are involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And if you can, I love the like go get dirty and also just like the excitement of, okay, I don't need to know it all, right? Can that actually be an exciting thing?
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. I'm gonna have to journal more about it.
Yeah. Good. Good. I'm glad. Yes. Catherine is asking in the chat if how comes later, what is the timeline for what or why? So let me know, Catherine, if I'm answering. I hope, you know, sometimes it's hard with chat, but I think I'm going to answer what you're asking, but if not, let me know. In terms of timeline, like we've been saying, you may not get the full vision right away, and that's okay. You can still move on to the how before having every single detail of the vision laid out, but you do want at least, to start to articulate a little bit the what. I love that you're putting the why in there, right? Like what's the inspiration? We spoke about that a lot last week, and kind of have that drop in. And it can take 5 minutes or it might take a week or two. It's going to be different with each client, but just to like have a little space for, okay, I know at least vaguely what I'm moving towards. And I feel a sense of commitment to that. Jessica.
Hey there. So when you said about embodying the why and everything in order to get to the how, that really hit me because this is work I do with dragon boat paddlers out on the lake. And I run dragon boat 101. So I'm expecting that people arrive at the lakeside with zero knowledge of how to do this thing. And I actually prefer that. And so I have a new training tool that my husband made for me. We took an old paddle and we stuck a crab float on there, like a styrofoam thing. Mm-hmm. Because I can talk and talk and talk about the paddle stroke and what it needs to look like and everything else. But if the person doesn't feel it in their body, they're never going to do it properly, or, you know, they'll do it according to how they interpreted my words. So what I do is I take this new paddle with the float on it, and I have them. It's just like when you're in the swimming pool, trying to hold the beach ball under the water, and everybody can understand what that feels like. So I have them hold the paddle in the water and feel where their muscles are engaging. And they have to tell me so that I know that they're engaging the right ones. And then I ask them to maybe refocus their mind on a different muscle. And then I have them paddle with that tool. And it's hard to do, right? Because it keeps wanting to pop up out of the water. And then when they had done a bunch of them, maybe 10 or 15, I have them take back their original paddle, which feels much lighter, all really good. And they put it in the water and their paddle stroke is perfect. And I hardly had to say a word.
I love it. It's such a great practical example of activating more than just the cognitive level of learning and processing, right? And bringing it to that body level and then being a little sneaky too, which I love.
Yeah,
great. Good. Catherine, I'm having a feeling maybe I didn't answer the question that you wanted me to answer. Catherine.
Yeah, my question was sort of separating what and why, and like how much is why something that comes up sort of at the beginning of the whole coaching container, so we sort of know their values, and how much is it something, how much do we really try and nail down, like, why are you even starting something new before getting into what is it and really kind of like going wild or mild with figuring out what that, envisioning what the what is.
Yeah, it's such a good question. I wish there was a formula of like step one, let's get clear on the values. Step two, let's get clear on the why. And then from there, the what will come. But it's going to unfold differently in different situations. You know, sometimes a client will come and say, you know, I want to create a new blah, 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 I don't know, project, whatever. And I have these two, I don't really know what it's about, but I have these two ideas on it, right? So they're already coming with part of the what. And you might feel in that moment, first, you want to ask a few more questions about the what. And then from there come into the why is this, you know, what is the inspiration for this? What is the excitement? You know, what are you seeing? How does this fit into the bigger picture for you or your values, or what values do you want to infuse in it? And then other times in other moments, a client might say, I want to, you know, create a new blah, blah, blah. And you might feel in that moment, you say, great. So let's start with what is at the core of this project. What are the values that you want at the core of this project? And then build it out that way. I don't think that one is necessarily better than the other. And in many situations, either of those two pathways will be very effective. I think it just depends on who the client is and the timing and the context and what they bring to you. So I don't want you to get caught up in like, I'm not going to know when to do it, which way. I think either way.
Examples you gave were really helpful of kind of like how, because the client's just going to come with you either sort of in a why state or in a what state, and you kind of go from there. Exactly. So yeah, that makes sense.
Thanks. Yeah. Or they might come with, I know I want to create something, but I have absolutely no idea what it is. If that's what they come with, then I would start with the why or the values first. Okay, good. I'm glad you asked to clarify that. Okay, here's another point of resistance or what something that makes new things hard. Kristen mentioned this in a way that this shows up in the chat earlier. It hasn't worked before, so it's not going to work now. Right? That's a very common, I know I have experienced that one myself, right? It is a very common belief that can come up for people when they step into a new project or the next cycle, you know, something maybe hasn't worked or, you know, they've let it go for a while, right? So for example, I've tried to lose weight before and it didn't work. So it's not going to work now. I've tried to find a romantic relationship before, but it's always failed. So it's going to fail now. I've taught a preview workshop before, but nobody became a client. So I won't get any clients this time. Bruce is saying in the chat, or the opposite, it's been working. So why change it? Yeah. And in those cases, I love that you're bringing this up. Like sometimes something that has been working doesn't need a new vision, right? And then other times, something that has been working in the new cycle, we want to keep some of the parts of the old vision and then bring some new ones in. All right, so everyone take a moment. When has that happened to you? Lisa's saying it's exactly where you are right now. When is a moment where that's happened for you in any area of your life? Right? It didn't work before, so it's not gonna work now. So I'm not even gonna vision it, or I visioned it, but I don't know if I'm actually gonna go for it. Maria.
Just in brief, I'm exactly there right now. And I hired a coach, you know, and I'm here in this, and I hired a coach thinking all coaches are the same. And she's great, but she's not a sacred depths coach. And I'm a pretty clear person. I say, this is what I want to do. So she just took all my stuff at face value, exactly what I said I wanted to do. And then like by session two, which we're only like two or three sessions in, she's like giving me the strategy to grow my email list. And I'm like, wait a second, I just did a launch that failed. And now you're just telling me to grow my email list. We haven't even gone through any of the stuff, my challenges. And so I guess because I'm confident or clear, but there's none of this vision. So I'm being my own coach, or being with here, doing my own stuff, being like, okay, what's my vision? And running into all my challenges. So yeah. I'm just putting that here, that all coaches are not the same. And when you jump to strategy, even if you sound clear, it's too soon.
That's right.
Because something I did didn't work before.
Yes. Thank you so much for, I feel like that's a good testimonial for everything that we're looking at last week and this week, right? That's why it's so important, because human beings are tricky. We're tricky. We say it and we mean it, but we don't, or there's other things, right? And we want to be attuned to that and understand that about human behavior and support our clients to work with it. Sometimes we have to play catch up with it. It's happened to me too as a coach, but we want to try to get it before we have to play catch up with it. Good. Jen.
So mine was, wanting more clients. Actually, I'm like, do I want more clients right now? But then something that hasn't worked before, so it's not going to work, is doing the online masterclass, free masterclasses.
Yeah, that hasn't worked before, so I'm not going to do it again.
Yeah. And, it's so much energy, but I haven't signed up. I don't think I've signed up a client for doing one of those. And what's true is most of my clients come to me if they've met me in person. So then it becomes a conversation of pivoting and a deeper why, like, why do I want to do an online masterclass? Because I do, I actually do. But then it's like, well, it's like, which way do you want to go? Do you want to do an in-person masterclass, like to get the clients, or do you want to just put yourself out there, do like practice, have fun? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to kind of look at that in a moment, like how to address that. Marla, I see that your hand is up. I want to get through this next piece first, because there's still a lot of pieces I want to get through today, but I'll swing back to you, I promise. So I want to hear your voice. So, okay. So even just from what Jen just shared, when it comes up for a client, it didn't work before, so it's not going to work now. Jen is talking about the why, right? So sometimes connecting back into the why, to the deeper why, to the inspiration can help. We also want to normalize, I'm going to use this word a lot today, we want to normalize that sometimes things don't work at first. Or that sometimes things worked for a while and then they stopped working. That doesn't mean that they're not going to work again, right? But so, and culture, and particularly when it comes to marketing, like the coaching industry, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, the marketing industry has had us believe that it's all unicorns and rainbows and it's going to work the first time, always. And I can just tell you from being in business for many decades and having a thriving, successful business, that many things do not work the first or even the second and sometimes the third time around. So we want to also normalize some of that, right? That it does take time. So we don't have time to do it right now, but I want to give you this as an assignment. And Lisa, this might help with what you just shared in the chat. So it's another journaling prompt. And the journaling prompt is, I start again because. And you can do some writing on that either in relationship to a specific project or relationship or new thing, or just in general, I start again because, and see what wants to come through there. Hopefully some inspiration and higher wisdom. When we're working with clients, so again, we want to normalize, we want to help them get connected back to their why. We might want to ask them something like this journaling question of, I start again because... sometimes it's a matter of just creating awareness around the limiting belief. They may not realize that they're going on this belief of, it didn't work then, so it's not going to work now. Sometimes just the seeing of it, they can be like, oh, well, that's not necessarily true, right? Sometimes it's helpful to support a client to explore how the thing has the potential to be different than it was last time. To explore how this new thing or renew thing has the potential to be different. So you can ask questions, for example, like, what learnings about this do you have now that you didn't have before? Right? What do you know about this now that you didn't know before? What resources, inner or outer, do you have now that are going to help you with this thing? How are you different than the last time you worked towards this? What's different about you? Here's another question that might be helpful for some clients on this one. How is now the exact right divine moment for this to come to fruition? Why is now the right timing? Sometimes, what do you need from me so that you can move forward and be more successful this time, right? What didn't you have before that you might be able to receive from me? So helping them see how things are different this time around. They're always different, right? Even if it looks exactly the same, things are always different. There are new learnings. There are different ways of being. All right, let me pause on this. Marla, I don't know if what you wanted to share, if it your question got answered or if it's still appropriate. Yeah, go ahead.
No, well, you know, I think there's a question, and there is a question here. So I'm pondering, so why, because I put in the chat, I find it challenging to start new things. And as I'm listening to different examples and thinking of different examples, it seems there's like some magical ingredient, a mix of things. So for instance, when I think it was it Jennifer, somebody was talking about getting back into the pottery studio. So I am also a potter who took a long time off going, but going back, I'm like, there's no problem. It's just, I'm going to go and see what happens. So I'm detached from the outcome. That was easy. But then when I think about when I used to smoke and I made several attempts, I don't know, half a dozen attempts. And I just kept trying different times, different things, sometimes the same thing a second way, but I definitely was attached to the outcome. And so now I've had a lot of health issues that have me like on again, off again with it. So there's that component, but I still do have that aspect of, I tried this before and it didn't work. Well, in my mind, and yet I'm still going forward and doing it. So I'm just like, I guess what I'm struggling with is really what it, and so I see there's different things, but like, is it a mixture? I don't know if there's a real, really anything you can answer there. I'm just.
Yeah. So let me share what I think I'm hearing to make sure I'm hearing right. I think what you're saying is that it's different things in different moments or different situations. For example, for you with the example of smoking, you did kind of have this feeling or belief of like, it didn't happen before, so I don't know if it's going to happen again, but that's not standing in your way. You're committed enough to the why of the stopping smoking that you're willing to try again anyway, right? So you don't need to work on that piece of it. for someone else, they might, and it could be the same exact situation, right? Smoker has tried before, but for them, they're like, ugh, I've tried before and it hasn't worked. For you, that's not the thing. It's such a great example of always coach the what based on the who. You know, from the very little that you described about the smoking piece, for me, it sounds like it's either more to look at the strategy or the holding for accountability in the strategy. But it doesn't sound like you're having resistance to starting again or trying something new. That it doesn't sound like that's an issue for you.
Well, and that's what I mean. In that situation, I didn't. But in other, like starting something, so I am, you know, doing, but there's definitely, I'm having a drag on my system, so to speak.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. It's context. And it seems to be, I can't pin down like what the thing is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we don't. Yeah, it might be, we'll look at a couple of other reasons today. It might be that, this is an exhaustive, you know, it might be some other pieces. It might be that doing a befriend your fear process around it, looking more deeply, is there a fear or what is the limiting belief, you know, can help with that. One question you might want to journal on, Marla, that may or may not yield, but I think would be valuable, is what would be at risk for me if I were to let go of this habit, you know, and see what wants to come through there.
Okay, thanks. And by the way, I'm like just kind of using myself an example when I think of, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So what would
absolutely
be
if I did? Yeah. And again, that's why I was saying today's class is like a philosophy class. It's like us just understanding different resistances, but we still have to ask those questions of our, you know, we have to be listening and asking those questions of our clients. This is just to give us kind of some more understanding of human behavior behind some of it, that what it could be.
Yeah. And I guess what I'm hearing also is getting the context and what is the resistance in this context at this time.
Exactly. Exactly. Always coach the what based on the who.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Good question. Okay. A couple other pieces that I think are helpful that I want us to take a look at. All right. Someone in the chat earlier mentioned shiny object. Let's talk about, I see you. So let's talk about that. Sometimes people don't end up feeling excited about something new because they've taken one action, just one, or two, whatever it is, and it hasn't worked out yet, right? And they had this, like, you know, they're kind of thinking of this new thing is this shiny object. And there's this expectation of quick moving results, right? Usually when someone is following the next thing and the next thing and the next new thing, it's because they're a little bit addicted to this idea that things can happen fast and be exciting, you know, shiny. There's not going to be any bumps in the road, right? So we want to, when we're setting up with clients a vision and how they're going to move forward, we want to support them to be realistic about the effort that it's going to take or the amount of time that it's going to take. This is one of the things I, as you all know, I can really go off on in the industry, right? It's going to happen in a day. It's going to, you know, whatever it is. And then what happens is that clients have inappropriate expectations, and then they end up in despair because it hasn't happened right away. One of the, the best gifts that you can give a client is to support them to be realistic without it being heavy and, oh my God, it's going to suck, right? But to feel good about that and to let them know that this is going to take some work on your part, but in an inspiring way, in an empowering way. I think maybe we've probably most of us have fallen into the trap before for ourselves, right? Thinking it's just going to be 1, 2, 3, and it wasn't, right? So again, we want to always create awareness, set expectations, normalize. I feel like a piece of the work that I do with entrepreneurs is undoing marketing mania messages and reflecting truths. Always checking my own filters, by the way. Something might have been incredibly hard for me to do, and it's not necessarily going to be hard for my client. I don't want to project that onto them, right? So I want to check my filters on that and what is the language that I'm using and all of that. But I do feel like, and we can say the same thing for relationships or getting help, you know, moving to more health or whatever it is, there's a lot of misinformation out there about the process and the length of the process and that there are going to be bumps in the road and you're right, all the things. And so I feel like that is a part of our job, is to create awareness on that. Another thing that can really help with this piece is supporting our clients to build resilience. So some of that is also informational, right? It's okay to be a beginner, slow and steady. And purposeful wins the race. It might be about exploring how they've been resilient in the past, where they struggle with resilience, even defining what that means for them in general, or what they want resilience to look like in the project that they're about to embark on. What have they found helpful in the past that has allowed them to be resilient, patient, et cetera? All right, I'll pause here. Any thoughts or questions or what's sparking for you around the expectation piece? Jen, before I take you, I just want to see if anyone else. If not, I'll take you. No? Okay, Jen.
Yeah, I have a lot to say in this one. Can you hear me okay? I know my Wi-Fi is a little spotty. Okay. It's bringing up some, it's certainly bringing up a client of mine. She's getting in touch with her deeper why, and we're creating goals, and she's having a really hard time to implement them. And I'm, you know, she tells me like, oh my God, this program is amazing. And it's so good to reflect on how far she's come. But I just wanted to name this, that there's a part of me that's like, I'm cheering her on and I'm so stoked. And there's a part of me that's like, I'm not doing a good enough job because she's not actualizing her goals. And I recognize, you know, it's a process, but there is, and there's a part of me that like also wants to say, oh, and that's okay. But the bigger part of me is like, no, like why isn't it working? And she's telling me it's working, but yet I don't know. I'm spotty. I'm just going to turn my camera off.
Yeah. So it's such the mark of an incredible practitioner that you're able to name that for yourself, Jen. So first, I just really want to acknowledge you for that, right? And then knowing like there is a part of you that's like not doing a good job. Why isn't this working, right? Even when the client is happy and feels like they're moving forward. So you can work with this part of yourself. We won't get into like all the pieces and the details right now, but I would, with love and compassion and respect, intentionally, instead of this part of you just kind of like taking over, like it usually does when we're not being intentional, I would, with love and compassion and respect, hold space for this part of you, almost like you're having a session with it, like it's a client. And let it be seen and heard, you know, ask it what it's scared of, what it's really, and I know you know some of the things, but just let it express some more, you know, and ask it what it would need from you in order not to feel so scared, right? Because it's there obviously to protect you in a way. Let it know that, you know, it's not so helpful right now, and ask it what it would need from you to be able to kind of just like settle in a little bit more, and you know, ask it whatever you want, but I would absolutely work with that part of yourself. How does that feel?
And again, I just want to name this for myself and for everyone, like there's a piece of judgment here. I'm judging her. I get that. I see that. And that's like, oh no, like that's hard as a practitioner. Like that is not leveling the playing field. And yet I want her to get results. And I know I've seen this, especially with like business coaches. I'm not a business coach, but you know, I've felt that from business coaches that are like, all right, come on, like, and there is a little bit of that, right? Like sometimes we need a little.
For sure. There are moments for that. Just,
you know? So I'm playing with that. Like how, you know, recognizing what it is she really does need from what she's telling me. And
yeah.
And but yet not having not being attached, but yet again, I'm just naming parts.
Yeah. There is a part. No, I think it's really valuable to work on that part. And also, I think this next week, I think this will be helpful. We're going to also look at rhythms and how different people have different rhythms in terms of how they move forward and what paces they move forward at. And one isn't better than another, even though culture has told us that one is better than another. But I think maybe looking at some of that too will be helpful.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for naming that. Kristen.
Hi. So some stuff came up for me as you were talking about supporting clients to build resilience. As somebody with ADHD with rejection sensitivity dysphoria, this is extremely challenging. I find that like, I don't have a lot of resilience with failure. And it's not necessarily a shiny objects thing. It's more like it just really hits me in a very painful place when things don't work out. It's like my tolerance for risk is lower because of how I'm wired.
Yes.
So I'm curious, how would you address this with a client?
Yeah, it's such a good question. So first of all, normalizing it. Right? Always first normalizing. And then from there, Kristen, I actually have a sense that you know some things that I don't know. So I'm going to ask you, from your experience, what's some wisdom that you've learned around this?
I feel really emotional just tapping into that.
Yeah. Be with it.
Okay.
What have you learned? What's some wisdom that you've really gotten from your experience with this?
I feel like one of the pieces of the wisdom is that like the struggle of resilience points to what I deeply, deeply care about.
Mm. Yeah, talk more about that.
It's like there's such deep, incredible passion and such deep devotion.
Yes.
And such desire.
Yes.
That it becomes extremely excruciating not to see it materialize in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's pause on that for a moment. Mm. So often when we go into resistance, we hate on it, right? Like, I freaking hate that part of myself and it's holding, you know, all the things, right? But what would be possible if, when that resistance comes up, you remember the wisdom that you shared right now? Like, oh, wait, maybe I don't need to hate on this resistance.
Mm.
Maybe this resistance is reminding me of what is so important to me. Maybe it's part of my, God damn it, maybe it's part of my process that when I move towards something that is so important to me, resistance is going to come up because it is so important. And what if I can fold that into my process and accept that, thank you, that means that I'm moving forward because this is one of the steps that normally happens in my process. What might happen to the intensity and the duration of the resistance if you reoriented your relationship to it based on that wisdom?
I think that would be very powerful because that would allow me to soften into it rather than push against it and maybe just really embrace the deep love and care that's there.
That's right.
That is like, that's really the why, and that's the driving force of why I want to do the thing anyway.
Yes. Yes. So that's, first of all, that's my homework for you. Okay. To watch that throughout the week, right? Mm-hmm. And then when it comes, so if you know that you're working with a client with ADHD, this is might be a piece of wisdom that you share with them to see how it lands, right? Because you've earned that, you know, through all of your life experience and just how self-aware you are. So that might be something to co-create awareness on. Okay. And then, and we'll get to this, by the way, when we get to resistance. I have a feeling you might already know a little bit how to do this, but I'll model this. Support them to hold space for that resistance in this loving way, right? Like, oh, this is actually an important part of the process, and reorient and soften in that way.
Thank you.
How does that land?
That feels really good. It feels a little scary because, like, what's on the other side of feeling all of these big feels? Will I have the energy and resiliency to move forward after that? I don't know. That's part of the unknown.
Yeah. So it's not, it's without an attachment. It's with a wish, but without an attachment.
Okay.
Right? It's with a, I hope that the softness will then allow me to move forward. Mm-hmm. But I might not right away. It might be followed with more resistance a few hours later or the next day. And then my work is to soften into it again.
Thank you. That's so
good. I'm so glad you brought it forward. So important for all of us. Okay, good. Okay, I'm going to try to hit on two things quickly in the next few minutes. Sometimes, every now and again, what's going to be important for a client is the reason why they're having trouble visioning the new thing or moving forward in with the new thing, even if they've visioned it, is they haven't yet fully let go of the old. So new things require the work of letting go of the old vision, the old relationship, the old project, even if it's the same project that you're starting up again, that the former experience of it. And sometimes people can get stuck. It's kind of like, I mean, I've been there before of trying to start a new romantic relationship, but I might have broken up with the old person, but I haven't let them go, you know, or the idea or the hope or right, whatever it is. Later on in Sacred Depths, we'll do a full session on releasing and letting go. And that's like that winter phase. But I do for now just want to bring to our attention that the spring always comes after the winter. And if someone has skipped over the winter, it's going to be hard for them to really be in the spring. That makes sense? Yeah. So that's sometimes an issue where that for a particular client, we're going to want to explore. And then last piece for today, sometimes for some folks, what can be really helpful to bring that like excitement of the new thing is to activate the highest version of their inner child. So oftentimes we lose connection or contact to that magical inner child before history got piled on top of it, right? You know, and we've kind of lost connection to the openness, to the excitement, to the curiosity, to the wonder of new things, right? Because we've become jaded. We've disconnected from the willingness to laugh at our own mistakes and keep on going anyway. You know, we've disconnected from just the doing it for the fun of it, right? Because we're gonna enjoy it. And so sometimes it can be worthwhile to take some time with a client to first maybe explore some of this, right? How much access do they have to that highest version of their inner child? What does that inner child want them to know about this new project? How can they bring that inner child energy into the new project? Maybe taking some time to feel what that excitement of that child feels like, or that openness, or that wonder, and to make some body memories of it, and then have them come back to that before they go to take actions or whatever it is, right? So working on kind of bringing more of a connection back to those energies themselves, which, you know, when you have a lot of adulting to do in your life, sometimes we lose connection. Sometimes also, like I said, there's certain things that happen in history that tell us we can't have that and all that. And then we might have to work some befriend your fears around it. But I think even before that, it's always worthwhile to just see, can we, sometimes it's just like right there hiding under the surface, right? And we just can we connect in with that energy? What does that energy want for us to know? All right, we've got a minute left. So I'll use it to invite you to write down what you're really taking for yourself from our time together today. What are you taking for yourself? And then I'd love to hear from at least one of you, voice to voice, what you're taking, or if you have any questions. Victoria.
I'm so excited we got to the inner child. I feel like my inner child has been waiting, and I know it's now 2 o'clock, but like I was trying to frame it into this call the whole time, I think, because there's this thing that happens when I get regulated and grounded and like the water settles and I'm like, oh, now I'm clear. It's like, that's the moment that there's this opening that my inner child's like, and but actually what happens is it dysregulates the system. I go into like hyper, like I go into like overexcitement because there's this energy that's just so excited to be here.
Yes.
And yes. It's like, oh, like I'm always trying to find ways to integrate that energy more and more, because without that integration, it actually is dysregulating. And then yeah. I get like scattered. Yes. So I kind of just need to say that out loud.
I'm so glad that you are. Yeah. So I think that awareness will help. And then there's practices too that can help with that. So giving intentional time without it needing to look anyway, like let it get as excited as possible, put on some, I don't know, girls just want to have fun. I don't know, whatever. And let run through the energy, even the excess of it, to find the aligned place, right? Mm-hmm. So having some sessions once a week or whatever, where you give it, it's like full rein to do what it wants. And then from there, ask it, okay, how do you want to show up for the rest of the day, right? And then come into that feeling, right? Practice making that body memory. And it's a practice. You can't just do it once, but yeah, I can tell you that's landing what I'm saying, right? So what I would say for you, Victoria, is, I don't know, over the next couple of weeks, make really good friends with that inner child. Mm-hmm. Take her out for spinning on the front lawn, whatever, like let her have her say, and then find the aligned place on that spectrum for integrating.
Yeah, new synapses are firing. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good. And Jen.
This is more personal question to you. Do you feel like, so I think about inner child a lot and curiosity, and I'm curious to you, do you feel like curiosity stems from our inner child, or is it, can there be both adult curiosity and inner child curiosity, or do you think the root of it is that awe and wonder of our inner child? Personal question to you.
Yeah. So I don't know. Okay. I don't want to invalidate your question at all. Like, I love that you're asking the question, and I want to say, I don't know. And also this is the part that I hope is not invalidating. I don't know if it matters. So
it matters to me.
Okay. but I'm saying from like a cognitive understanding for me, like, I don't know. I mean, I think what I can say is when I talk about inner child, I'm talking about an archetypal energy. Mm-hmm. So it's the archetypal energy of openness and curiosity and excitement. And that archetypal energy is not separate from the discerning, right? When you're saying adult, like I'm thinking, what are the different adult energies, like a discerning energy or a, you know, get it done energy. It's almost like I can bring that in to partner with those. So I don't know. I don't know the answer of, does it also come from the adult part? It could, or maybe for some people it can, but I think inside of me, the way it functions is, I'm bringing this part to be friends with this part versus thinking that they have to be separate. Like I either need to be all like adult and studious and all the things, you know, or have the curiosity and openness, but they can kind of support each other. I don't know. Is that satisfying? It might not be.
No, because what I want to say is instead of adult, let's say present self. Mm-hmm. Let's just say present self rather than adult self, right?
Yeah. What are you? I feel like there's something that you're trying to get at that you're not saying.
I have you on my podcast and ask you this question. Yeah. So
I think you need to turn your camera off, Jen, because you're
total. You know, I know we're at the end of the call, so it's a kind of like an. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, that's much better. Yeah, there was a delay.
This is totally an after hours like coffee talk question with you. Yeah, I've been developing a masterclass for quite some time and I'm trying to like narrow down my pillars. And I go back and forth with just curiosity. Can I just say inner child? And you know, one of the pillars for myself is inner child. Another pillar is curiosity. And so I'm like, can I just couple them because I'm trying to
got it. What I would say is whatever serves your purposes, right? However it makes the most sense for you to teach it and share on it is how you should do it. I don't think there's not one scientific answer to your question. I feel pretty confident in saying. So I think it's about what feels most resonant and alive and exciting for you. Like, how do you want to share on it? And what is going to really have it land deeply for your people? And we can absolutely talk about it. But I think you should go with like how it feels for you and what you've seen.
Absolutely. And so part of my investigative self is asking people that I really value and love, what do they think? Because I like to be inquisitive. And so yeah, it's a coffee talk question. So I would love to coffee talk with you sometime.
Sounds good. I love it. All right, everyone. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week. Any questions come up or ahas or anything you need, let me know. Talk to you soon.